cafe quality brews without a barista? That's the Ninja Luxe Cafe. Yep, no skills needed. Rich espresso, balanced drip coffee, rapid cold brew, all made by you because Barista Assist technology handles the details. Grinding, weighing, brewing, so you don't have to. Finished with silky microfoam made with dairy or plant-based milk, hot or cold, hands-free. Still no skills needed. From first-timer to full-blown coffee fan, you can brew it all with the Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
I'd like to think I've come a long way over the past few years. Once upon a time, I couldn't even say the word penis.
Hello, everybody. This is, again with this, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 12, Sleeping Arrangements. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
The reason I started laughing at myself during that intro was that I was imagining not doing the whole thing from Frisky Dingo where Xander Cruz is just repeating penis to over himself. And over again. My penis. Yeah. All right. Great. Yes. Moving on.
Sarah's not here. We welcome back Adam Grossworth. Hello, Adam.
Hello. We miss you, Sarah, especially because this episode slid off my brain while it was happening. So we'll see how good of a replacement I am this week.
We sure shall. But first, we want to tell you what's happening in the club, not the club where Joey and Audrey were going off last week, the Again With This podcast club. This Friday, March 6th, we're going to be bringing you again with this 278. Let's watch Ned Brower and Jenny O'Hara in the pit. Who's Ned Brower? I'm so glad you asked. He played Elliot in the season premiere and this very episode we're about to talk about. And Jenny O'Hara is, of course, Scott Scanlon's terrible mother. And both of them are in the season 2 premiere of The Pit, and that's what we're going to be talking about. It is season 2, episode 1, 7 a.m. It's on HBO Max. We will link it in the show notes. And this Thursday, March 5th, our Patreon high rollers at the $5 level and up will get the February edition of Again With Them.
Woohoo!
I just, as we're recording this, have listened to the first two episodes in February. Tori is back and Tori is terrible. The second episode, it's just Tori and Jenny. And I like, for as much fun as we make of Amy, and we make a lot of fun of her, boy, does the episode really suffers without her. She does a lot more work than I think we give her credit for when she's there.
Is it worse Tori than usual, or is it just because you had a break?
I think it's because we had a break. It's very clear Jenny and Amy could do this by themselves. Like, Tori is back and she immediately says how many scenes she fast forwarded. Like, you were gone. I know you were sick, but like, at least do the work that you're there for. Anyway.
You can watch it in bed. We know this.
Yes. Well, she had vertigo, so apparently that made it hard for her to watch TV. She has a lot of problems. We'll get into it. If you pledge to join the club at the $5 level or higher, you will hear all about it. Again with this podcast.com/club for all that information and more. Are you ready, Adam?
Yes.
Are you as ready as you ever will be to talk also, about this boring episode? Okay.
Also, yes.
Let's start with our C plot. Elliot from the season premiere returns. Like I said, we open in Wilder's not creative writing class where he's lecturing that writing a first novel is like marriage, something you shouldn't undertake until you're at least 25. I did not follow his advice on either of those. I wrote a bad teen novel when I was in grade 8 and got married at age 22. So suck it.
He's still here. So it worked out.
That's true.
Half of it did at least.
Wilder is lecturing. We see Elliot from the season premiere in the back row watching Joey as she watches Wilder, who then winds up with this clip 2.
So for next time, I want you to read the first two books on your syllabus. One's a masterpiece. The other, a dismal, horrific failure. You can't tell which is which. You might want to rethink your schedule.
Okay. As a former English major, I just want to say we never were taught dismal, horrific failures. Like, that seems like a waste of time.
Yeah, it's weird. Also, like, as a slow reader who bullshitted my way through the ends of a lot of books in high school and college because I never got there, I assume this class meets at least once a week, if not more, and you're making them read two novels between now and the next class, one of which we will later see is Fitzgerald? No.
ask me about my experience as a English / comparative literature, basically major, which was a huge, huge mistake. Like all I remember about college, because I lived at home, I was not going to the club, making everyone listening to me sing I Want You to Want Me, because I was at home usually reading like 1,000 pages of school books every weekend. And that's not an exaggeration. Like one time I kept track. It was brutal. And look at me now. Obviously, I'm in the field I was meant to. Whatever.
You are a professional writer. I'm just going to point that out.
Well, but I wasn't in a creative writing class. I just read a bunch of shit I do not remember anymore, really. As everyone disperses, Wilder calls Joey up to his desk and clip three.
Joey, is there anyone in this class with whom you would wish to become better acquainted?
Is this a trick question?
I have a sneaking suspicion that boy in the back there is waiting to talk to you.
Elliot! Elliot Sawyer!
His name's Elliot, and I'm a freshman comp.
Elliot, are you waiting to talk to me?
No.
And is your shoe actually untied?
No, not so much.
Yeah, I'm rarely wrong about these things.
Well, you're wrong for inserting yourself into students' personal business, you weirdo.
Especially if Elliot was fake tying his shoe to wait for Joey, who you've now delayed, making it awkward. Like, Elliot was doing fine without your help.
I'm going to also say this guy's wrong on time management. I don't know why a department head, which we've hilariously been told he is teaching A, this much, and B, so many freshmen and sophomore classes. Like, this is not what he would be doing, probably. But whatever. He asks if Elliot was waiting to ask Joey out. When Elliot says no, Wilder says, Elliot's not half the man Wilder thought he was then, sir. Save some of these witticisms for when you go home to your wife.
Inappropriate.
Yeah. When Wilder has left them alone, Elliot guesses Joey doesn't remember him. The first reminder is sitting behind her in econ, where she says she mostly faced front, as the profs seem to prefer. Then he brings up the Boston Bay party from the season premiere. Joey ruefully remembers. A lot of weird things happened that night, he tries. Joey does not disagree, but has to get to her next class. And then Elliot chases her down outside, carrying his coat, as we all love to do when we're outside in Boston in January, and offers to walk her to class and get a coffee on the way. But she nicely blows him off with a classic Joey wince / smile, saying she's late to meet her roommate. And if he remembers who that is and that Joey spotted him coming out of their room the day they met, it is not evident from the way he is acting at this point. Over to the Worthington bookstore, where Joey is apparently buying her books as she goes, amateur, in front of a shelf offering What is Atheism? That's not a college book.
I do not believe for a second that this girl that we know, who is obsessive about everything, waited. I mean, maybe it's a money thing. I guess that I would buy. But like, yeah, she waited until the class has already started to buy her books.
I mean, if money is a concern, that's all the more reason to get in there fast, because you want to buy a used copy.
Yes.
Because they're cheaper.
Solid point. Yeah.
Apparently, the dismal failure that Wilder is teaching alongside The Other Side of Paradise by F. Scott Fitzgerald is Wilder's own novel, Notes from the End of the World. And congrats to the production design department on spelling every word correctly this time. Apparently, Wilder has been staking out the aisle like Ross in that episode of Friends where everyone at his college is having sex in front of his thesis in the library because no one ever goes there. But Wilder is somehow embarrassing himself even worse. Clip four.
Don't believe the blurbs. They were all bought and paid for.
You wrote this?
Yeah, shameless, isn't it? Signing my own work. That's the only way that monstrosity has managed to stay in print all these years. Go ahead, read the first one.
A whiz-bang ride to the twisted soul of Neil Pollock? Wait a second, as in...
The greatest living American writer? Absolutely. Relatively meaningless, however, since I happen to be sleeping with his stepdaughter at the time.
Okay. Name-checking Neil Pollock is great. It's such a 2002 choice. He was in, like, the orbit of Dave Eggers and those types. But at the time this episode aired, he was 31. So not sure how he had a stepdaughter old enough to have been sleeping with Wilder around a decade ago, unless her mother was much older than he was. And maybe she was. I don't know. But this feels like they wanted to name-check Dave Eggers, but then couldn't figure out a plausible relationship for Wilder to have had with him. Leaving aside the whole thing of, like, this is the only reason this book is still in print is because I teach it. Like, no prof would ever do this.
No.
It's so embarrassing.
Like, you know, maybe we should ask Sarah, like, maybe Toni Morrison did this at Princeton, but she's Toni Morrison. It's different.
I bet not, like, even her.
Probably, like, not.
Everyone else is teaching her her books. She doesn't need to. Ooh. Joey decides not to question the stepdaughter claim, and we get this clip 5.
So she's the girl in the book.
And how do you know there's a girl in the book?
Well, there's always a girl in the book.
You know, Miss Potter, you're getting a little too sassy for your own good here. Pretty soon you're going to have all the boys in my class flirting with you. Not that it's any of my business.
So what's it about?
A bunch of friends living together, sleeping with each other's friends. It's very incestuous. Featuring, of course, a thinly veiled version of me when I was 20.
You wrote this when you were 20?
Yeah, pretty disastrous haircut, huh? But you know what they say. Never hurts to remain on a first name basis with the person you used to be. Otherwise, he or she may come back to haunt you when you least expect it. And don't stay up all night reading it, please.
This guy's the worst. But as you said in the last one, she's primed for this kind of flirtation from a life with Dawson.
It's true. I'm liking this Joey of these two episodes, where she is a little sassy. Mm-hmm. Her quips are on point. Like, it's just, it's better than Mopey, even though I wish she were doing it to literally anybody other than this guy and Charlie.
Seriously. We're about to hear all about Audrey's first day as a restaurant server in the B-plot, but there's a little bit of it here as she returns to the dorm room, kicks off her shoes, and falls into bed next to Joey, whining their feet feel like one big blister. Joey reminds her that she said Audrey shouldn't wear those shoes, and Audrey sighs that it's official, Joey does know everything. Joey points out that Audrey has flopped down on Joey's bed, but Audrey says if they slept together, it would be the most action the bed's ever seen. And Joey will have Audrey know that Joey got asked out today. Audrey correctly guesses that she said no, assuming it's because Joey's still fixated on Dawson, but Joey says actually it's because the guy was one of Audrey's conquests. And Audrey needs a lot of description to remember who Elliot even is, including that he has kind of a Crispin Glover thing going, which is something I would not have put together. But as soon as I heard it, was like, oh, my God, he totally does.
A little creepy, but also cute. Yeah, totally.
Audrey says they did not sleep together. He walked her home like a gentleman. But when he found out Audrey's roommate was Joey, he just went on about how great Joey was until he bored Audrey to sleep. And Joey is intrigued by this new information. And when we see Joey again, it's the next morning, and she's creeping up to Elliot's dorm room door, deciding not to knock and then changing her mind. But before she can actually knock, Elliot opens the door first and is surprised to see her, asking if she's lost. Oh, buddy. She vagues around about the weird stuff that happened on the night they met. She was waiting on a friend, kind of, but that doesn't mean she doesn't want to make new friends, so she was thinking they could start over. Elliot blurts that he didn't sleep with her roommate. That's what this is all about, right? And Joey admits that it is and asks if he wants to get coffee. Elliot says he has a class and then immediately admits he doesn't. He just wanted to see if she would be disappointed, and she was. So she smiles and they walk off, and we get this clip 6.
So that whole thing that happened the other day in Wilder's class, that was really embarrassing.
Yeah, I know. It took a lot of work to make it come out that way.
What?
What?
What that means?
I don't either.
Which part? I don't know.
I thought this was really cute, and then that being the button on the scene kind of ruined it.
I know. I don't know what they were talking about. I know. On to the B plot. Pacey suddenly got lots of career options. Remember Melanie? Adam, I know you do, because you watched every episode of Once Upon a Time.
I do. It's weird. It's very strange, because I also didn't watch House, so like Jennifer Morrison is only Once Upon a Time to me, and just like the whatever accent she's doing in this, and just her being so young, it's very strange to me.
Yeah. Anyway, she's back to remind everyone who she is, including calling Pacey her boyfriend, back to flirt with Pacey. She's back to vaguely say she's been gone because she got busy, and to find out about his job at what she calls the hippest restaurant in town. Finally, she is there to give him some bad news. Her uncle sold the boat that Pacey has been living on this whole time, but there's good news, too. He bought an even bigger boat and has sent Melanie to the marina to ask Pacey if he wants to join its crew and sail around the Greek islands, leaving in 3 days. She takes off before the boat stirs, feeling she has neither the time nor the luxury to pursue, leaving Pacey with a lot to think about. And I guess that guy was busy, so they couldn't get him back to tell the person who's been living on his boat that he has to leave, as opposed to sending his niece to do it. Very strange, other than, you know, she's cuter, I guess. And then we're at the restaurant where Audrey, in her server uniform, is reapplying her lip gloss at the kitchen's open bar counter using the back of a spoon as a mirror when Danny storms up to say table six isn't happy. Audrey doesn't blame them. The Sam's kind of gross today. Sucks to be Danny, she adds. And then Pacey comes out from the back. Clip seven.
Hey, gorgeous.
You never call me gorgeous.
That's because you're old enough to be my father, Danny.
Ouch.
I appreciate that she was clear. She is not the new Karen.
But also he is 30.
I know.
Like, it's just a little weird.
Yeah. Ever since you told me that he was drama star at your high school, it's like all I can see. I can really imagine him being hot shit at your school.
Like, also he's nice, mm-hmm. which helps. I think he maybe played football too. He was definitely that guy.
Oh my God.
But like, yeah, he's 3 years older than me. He was 30 when this was filmed. He's not old enough to be Audrey's father. Sorry. No.
When Audrey flounces off, Pacey asks to speak to Danny, who immediately says no. Whenever an employee asks that, it's never going to be anything good, so you just cut it off before it goes anywhere. That's advice Pacey can use when he's running his own kitchen. Speaking of which, Danny had to fire Ephraim, the baker with all the prison tattoos, because he went back to prison, and Danny wants Pacey to take his place. Clip 8.
Me? Yeah. Bread is an art, Pacey, and today you're going to take that first step towards becoming that artist. You think you're up for it? Well, I sense doubt, but Pacey... You're good, Pacey. You are good. You are by far the most naturally gifted culinary freak I have ever had the good fortune to stumble across. A bit rough around the edges, yes, but the force is strong in you, kid. I'm serious. I don't know what I'd do without you around here.
They are building up Pacey's skills so much that I'm like, I can't imagine how they're going to have him go into finance or whatever else I know he does after this. Like, they've.
Oh, God, I don't remember that.
I believe that's it.
Well, it's also weird because we definitely saw him fuck up every piece of the dinner 2 episodes ago.
Right.
Is A. And B, no. Like, you could teach him how to make bread. Mm-hmm. But at your fancy restaurant, you're going to either hire a proper baker or you're going to go buy your bread somewhere. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have Pacey just do it.
Right.
Like, bread is hard.
Bread is hard. And like, if you're for what they're doing, it doesn't seem like it would be worth it to have someone who's only doing bread.
No, like, I'm sure they would buy it. But like, even leaving that aside, like,
yes,
it doesn't make any sense.
No, being good at cooking doesn't mean you're good at baking. They're very different skills.
Yeah.
Danny gets called away and Pacey droops, leading Audrey to ask why he looks all perturbed. Pacey claims it's nothing. She doesn't look convinced, but she takes her order and goes. And I guess between the lunch and dinner service, Audrey is setting up tables when she notices Pacey moping again out in the middle of the floor, presumably so he's waiting for someone to notice him. She makes him tell her what's up. So he tells her about the job offer on the boat, which she thinks sounds great. Isn't the young man in the sea routine his whole thing? He doesn't disagree. He's ecstatic at the thought of getting back out on the open water, but he's having a hard time bringing it up to Danny, expecting Danny to be disappointed after all the mentoring he's done. Clip 9.
So stay.
Well, this is the opportunity I've been waiting for all year.
So go.
You know, I'm always amazed by what help you are, Audrey.
Listen, Pacey, sailing out into the great wide open, it sounds like an awesome opportunity to me. And if that's what you want to do, you should do it.
Very helpful.
Yeah.
Seems very simple to me, but...
Yeah, Team Audrey.
The next time we see Pacey, he's distracting Danny and Danny's uncovered hair from the dish he's in the process of cooking to have as intense a heart-to-heart as Danny can fit in before he has to go meet the butcher. Pacey says this is hard for him to say, and when Danny's like, you're not going to quit again, are you? Pacey's expression is so miserable that Danny has to laugh and order him to come out with it. Clip 10.
You remember how over the summer I told you I was working on a yacht down in the Caribbean? Vaguely, yeah.
Oh, the boat I used to fuck my mistress on? Yeah, right? I vaguely remember that. When Pacey tells him about the Greece trip, Danny's happy for Pacey to spend another summer doing that. It's easy to find summer help in a college town that empties out when the school year ends, sure. But Pacey says it's not for the summer, it's for right now. And Danny tells him to accept the offer of a lifetime, gives him a handshake and a manly hug, announces to the kitchen that they're losing another one, and makes everyone applaud Pacey before slipping out with another handshake and a wink. And once again, this is just like when he turned down Danny's job offer in the season premiere, and Danny was like, okay. Pacey looks heartbroken that Danny is not begging him to stay. Also, justice for Karen, because every person in the kitchen is a man. So she was right.
Yeah.
About Danny's sexism, by the way. And after their shift, Audrey asks Pacey how it went. When Pacey says Danny took it surprisingly well, Audrey doesn't know why Pacey is surprised. People who care about you just want you to be happy. And when he still seems wistful, she suggests that maybe Pacey wanted Danny to be disappointed because Pacey actually likes it in Boston. Pacey doesn't deny that, but says it can't compare to the view from a boat deck in the middle of the Caribbean. Seems like all you'd be seeing is water, but okay. And Audrey adds that there's another reason for Pacey to stay in Boston, which is he wants her. Pacey flirts back that if Audrey's attracted to him, she can just say so. They don't have to play these games, and they banter on. Clip 11.
Pacey, you're really nice and everything. It's just that, I don't know, you're kind of boring.
Boring? I'm boring? You think I'm boring?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain, really. It's just the whole walking on water thing. It doesn't really do it for me.
I'm not boring. I am not boring. Did you ever stop to think that you might not actually be my type?
No.
No?
No, guys don't have types.
What do you mean guys? Of course guys have types. Are we not human? Do we not have feelings?
Pacey.
Yes?
I have boobs. You would sleep with me.
I mean, he would. Uh-huh. She's right.
And he should.
And he should. But like when she's like, your whole walking on water thing, like she doesn't know that version of him. The only walking on water Pacey is the one the fans know, really.
It is sort of wildly inconsistent what Audrey does and doesn't know. And also, like, I guess we've just forgotten about the whole prom thing.
Right.
And Joey's only told her good stories and not awful ones.
Yeah. Well, it's that's weird. I mean, it's nice
also,
of her.
Yeah. It's also wildly unrealistic that these people would ever hang out.
True.
Like at the different campuses and whatnot. So whatever, we just need to let it go.
So Pacey tries, not very hard, no pun intended, to claim he doesn't actually think he could sleep with Audrey, actually, and no, there's nothing wrong with his parts. Clip 12.
You're just too body for me.
Ew, body? You make it sound like I'm Bette Midler or something.
Well, hey, if the shoe fits.
I mean, the Bette Midler comp is actually not bad.
No, it's great.
She is body, and that is a compliment.
Same thing I said about Joey earlier. Like, everyone seems to be lightening up at this point in the show. And I actually want this energy all the time from everyone on this show. Please.
Yeah.
Desperately, I want this.
For real. So Pacey offers a ride home, but then Audrey sees Melanie show up behind Pacey's shoulder. And there's more banter about which of them Melanie is there for. Audrey says if it's him, Melanie has crappy taste in men. And if it's Audrey, she's a really smart lesbian. Pacey turns around and gets bashful when he sees who it is, and he takes off his apron and tosses it in two consecutive shots. You can see this in the visual aids because I made a GIF. Little continuity error there. Audrey lets him off the hook for the lift that he offered, adding this, clip 13.
Listen, be careful. Use redundant forms of birth control and don't push her head down. Girls don't like that.
Take that, Parents Television Council.
Wow.
That's bold. So then, Melanie's sleeveless top and Pacey all end up back on the boat, reminiscing about their summer together. She's glad he's going to go back out. She felt like he seemed sad and restless when they got back to Boston. She likes to picture him as he was on deck with a great tan under a Hawaiian shirt, margarita in one hand, the other hand in the general vicinity of her. Pacey thinks that sounds like the greatest song Jimmy Buffett never wrote. Then asks if Melanie herself never thinks about leaving her life and going back out on a boat. And she says she does, but she won't. Clip 14.
I've got this life here. Got school, friends. Guess I'm sort of putting down roots, you know?
Putting down what? Putting down roots.
Roots.
Yeah, I thought that was Pennsylvania coming through, but she's from Chicago.
Hang
apparently.
On, hang on. Bum, 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 bum. No, putting on the roots.
Oh.
Oh.
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, it's hard to sing.
It's, yeah, yeah.
It's too many arpeggios. When Melanie's old and gray, she will think back on that summer and smile. Pacey asks about a guy it didn't work out with, but Melanie asks, what if she doesn't tell him about him and they do this instead, this being fool around. And after the commercials, it's morning. Melanie's getting dressed. Pacey comes out from wherever, surprised to see her heading out already for class, and offers to walk her out and to a great bagel place nearby. Does Boston have great bagels?
Well, great's a stretch.
That long pause says it all, really.
Yeah.
She, however, is already late, and Pacey compliments how effortlessly great she looks first thing in the morning, and they agree that last night was spectacular. Pacey says she makes a man want to stay on dry land, but she doesn't want to ruin her perfect sailor boy fantasy, telling him as she leaves to call her the next time he washes up in Boston Harbor. And I guess he doesn't, because we never saw her again until House. And then it's that night. Pacey's on the boat packing when Audrey pops down to ask nosy questions about his night with the well-bred blonde. Pacey asks if she really wants to know, and she says, no, gross. She was just being a pain in the ass. And a great one, he says. Audrey asks if they have to take this outside, but he says no, she would wipe the deck with him, and that would interfere with his packing. And Audrey's like, seriously, come outside, because all his friends are there wanting to know when he was going to tell them he was leaving. And Pacey's like, thank you so much, Audrey, but she says he never told her it was a secret. And they're not there to try to talk him into staying. They're happy for him, and they got him a gift to remember them, which is a very shiny gold sextant, which is a navigation tool device. Instrument. It was Dawson's idea, apparently, and it's in a very heavy-looking wooden box. And Pacey's touched but says he can't accept it. And when they insist, he explains that it's because he's not leaving. He likes Boston. Audrey adds that he also wants her, and Pacey plays along. But now he needs a place to live. Jen says there's always room for one more at Grams's, which is certainly true. It is gigantic, as we keep saying. But Pacey's not about that. Joey tells him he's stuck with them, and I would love to see the scene with Danny where Pacey has to take back quitting for a second time, but We don't, because that's the end of the storyline for now. Finally, we have our A-plot. Jen and Jack have issues with guys they're living with. We open this plotline on Jen in the bathroom at home doing her makeup when Dawson asks if he may enter. She continues beating her face as he says they're showing last year's thesis films at Viz Arts after registration. Would she like to go? She has to bluff her way through a philosophy exam and then do a shift at the radio station. And he suggests they have dinner tonight since it's been a while since they just hung out, which I think is all they do. But Jen has a photo shoot at the station as well. Seems improbable. Dawson makes a classic straight guy comment. He never thought Jen was that into makeup. And she sighs about how much makeup it actually takes to look like you're not that into makeup. He then asks if she has seen his toothbrush, and Jen realizes that the one she mistook as old and used to separate her lashes was, in fact, Dawson's. And this is after we see her put a Q-tip in her mouth and then use her saliva to tidy up her eye makeup. And between that and using what she knew was a toothbrush that had been in somebody's mouth, she is really being careless with her eyes. Hygiene is important with cosmetics. Yuck. Dawson's unconcerned, saying he'll just use Jen's toothbrush, and when she tenses up, he's like, we've been sleeping together for 3 weeks, and Jen knows, but it's her toothbrush. So he starts looking around for another new toothbrush he, for some reason, thinks Grams might keep in stock, noting Jen's extensive dental floss collection as he goes, until Jen gets weird about him opening her drawer, and then she backs off, worrying that she has freaked him out. It'll take more than that, he says, and I will allow this forehead kiss, since, as has been established, he has morning breath. And then we're with Jen at the radio station, where both the headphones over hair issue and the unauthorized Allison Hannigan impression are here to stay, apparently. Jen is being annoying on the mic and the board in a way that only someone who has been a DJ for 2.5 episodes can be. Clip 15.
Hi, people. This is Jen Lindley on 96.6 WBCW coming at you with 4 hours of pure, unadulterated kick-ass rock. And if you ask me, not that you did, but I'm going to tell you anyway, that's the problem with music today, is that nobody rocks anymore. I mean, you've got your Britney, you've got your NSYNC, blah, blah, blah. But where's the rock, I ask you? And so with this, I give you the stylings of Tenacious D with their rousing little ditty, Explosivo. Ow! Oh, gee, I'm awfully sorry, that was not supposed to happen. My apologies. Okay, this wouldn't be a problem if I had another song selected, but that's just not my process. It's not how I work.
You're fired. Why are you so bad at this? What do you mean that's not how you work? That's how it works. It is a job and you are doing it badly.
Yeah, of course she hates pop music, but come on.
Yeah.
It's 2002. Play some Britney.
Seriously. Jen announces that she's going to take a request and conveniently gets a phone call immediately. A girl needs advice. Does Jen have a boyfriend? Jen says yes, although she's not used to calling him that yet, having known him for years. And that's all the caller needs to know in order to proceed with her question. She's been having sex with a guy, and sometimes it is abbreviated. Jen can help, or thinks she can. Clip 16.
Well, the first thing that you have to understand is the truly fragile nature of the male ego.
Okay. I don't know if you're really killing it relationship-wise, but by all means, tell other people what to do, Carrie Bradshaw.
Also, Jen called Dawson her boyfriend 2 episodes ago.
Over to the frat house, where Dawson's helping Jack move in and resetting where Jack and Jen's storyline was about 4 episodes ago. The last time we saw Jack on screen, it was making peace with her, but never mind. Jack is impressed by the giant room. There's no reaction to Dawson's joke about Jack's porn collection from either Jack or Blossom. Blossom being the gay-baiting brother who recruited Jack and who is now in the process of moving out of this room. Jack claims he's never had his own bathroom before, which in the McPhee mansion we saw, that seems improbable, and he's confused about how and where everyone has ended up. And Blossom, totally casual, says Jack's name just came up in the lottery, no big deal. And that's when Eric, who was Audrey's date in the winter formal episode, shows up and we learn that Blossom's actually moving into his room down the hall. Clip 17.
That's a little weird.
What?
Well, Blossom is upperclassman, and Eric, he's a new active. In the room together, what's that all about?
Why is that weird?
Come on, man, would you give this room up?
Maybe Eric and Blossom are hooking up.
Maybe.
Let's consider this. They're not,
they have more chemistry than some couples on the show.
Don't get excited. When Dawson returns to Grams' house, Grams is at the kitchen island playing with the Game Boy Advance. She says Jack left behind, and that must be the work of the devil because it's had her in its thrall for the past 2 hours. When Dawson parks it next to her, she asks how registration was. First of all, I will say the bad hair from last week's episode is here to stay now, so that can't have helped. But also, clip 18.
A little weird. I don't really fit in there.
Why?
I'm not really that mad at the government. I don't smoke close cigarettes, and I don't know nearly enough about the French New Wave.
Parachuting in mid-year with a stank attitude? You're going to be real popular, buddy.
Yeah. Also, I can't imagine USC film was any less pretentious and annoying than fake
Emerson. Oh my God, seriously. Dawson then says it must be strange for Grams to see Jen and Dawson dating, and under her roof, no less. And by the way, Grams is what he calls her, not Mrs. Ryan like Joey, but Jack calls her Grams too, so maybe only if you are a resident, you get to have that privilege.
Well, I feel like that's consistent. I think it's Joey being uptight.
Maybe.
And, like, not being able to. I think they've all called her Grams except for Joey for a while.
I think Dawson called her Mrs. Ryan, like, before they got close.
Oh, so, maybe.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, they were all scared of her in season 1, and then they realized she was the best character on the show.
True. Dawson just wants Grams to know he thinks Jen is amazing. Grams says, it has been a bit strange, but she thinks she's come a long way over the past couple of years with Jen's help. There was even a time she couldn't say the word penis. Dawson would be fine if she never did again, and is ready to abide by whatever ground rules Grams sets. Gee, that's big of him. But Grams says Dawson is the nicest young man she knows, other than Jack, whom they know will never make an honest woman of Jen. So as long as Jen and Dawson are kind to each other, Grams will be happy.
Wasn't Grams a nurse?
Yeah.
Just feel like she would be able to say penis.
I think we probably said that at the time when it came up that Jen was making her say penis as a joke.
Penis.
There it is. So they shake on it, accompanied by flutling. And speaking of Jen, Dawson realizes her show is on and turns on the kitchen radio, standing next to it while Grams washes dishes by hand instead of showing his appreciation of her welcome by offering to do it. And they're just in time to hear this, clip 19.
I've been dating the nicest, sweetest guy for 3 months now, and everything's been awesome. But all of a sudden, he started
pulling away.
Totally.
Yeah, well, it's been 3 months. The honeymoon period's coming to an end.
What can I do?
I feel for you, sister. I really do. And I wish I had some sort of magical answer, but the harsh reality is that there is no Santa Claus. Professional wrestling is fake, and eventually, one way or another, men leave.
There must be something you can do.
Well, frequent sex usually helps for a while. Keeping some things to yourself is actually really good, but honestly, unless you're blessed with a proclivity for other women, the best way to deal with men is the same as any other major disaster. You gotta know what's coming, and you have to be prepared. So,
penis.
Listen, hold the line, Marilyn. During the break, I'll supply you with a list of essential reading and viewing materials.
Thank you,
Dave. She was in the scene? Uh-huh. She was like, in between them? I don't understand.
Uh-huh.
I would love to know what essential reading materials Jen has in mind, like the Scum Manifesto? I don't know. When Dawson has turned the radio back off, Graham says Jen's always had a flair for the provocative and that she probably doesn't believe all that. She's just fanning the flames of popular culture, whatever that means. And Dawson kind of frowns as he agrees, but we're only at NostrilCon 4 at the most. Like, he is not as mad as you would expect. Back at the frat house, Blossom and his lacrosse stick stop in to see Jack, who does like a four-second sigh before asking why Blossom gave up this room. Blossom shrugs that he just wanted to change the scenery. Jack sighs again that he joined the frat to be one of the guys. He doesn't want any special treatment. And without exactly addressing that, Blossom says Jack is one of them. When Jack directly asks if no one was willing to room with him, Blossom admits that, yes, originally Jack was supposed to be sharing with another guy, but by the time said other guy let Blossom know he wasn't comfortable with it, other people were settling in and this switch seemed like the easiest solution. And I'll give it to Blossom. That's good management to just take the hit himself instead of making it awkward, I guess. But Jack, the world-class detective, deduces that Eric is the one with the problem, and Blossom doesn't deny it, but says he's sorry. He really didn't see this coming. No comment. And Blossom slinks out. Jack bites his lip. Very expected. When Jen gets home from the radio station, Dawson is waiting outside in Boston in January, but at least they both have coats on. She guesses he was listening to her show and adds that a lot of people were. Producers think Jen is Boston Bay's answer to Carrie Bradshaw. That could mean a lot of things.
Sure.
And gave Jen her own call-in relationship advice show. Dawson warmly says that sounds great. And Jen, resigned, tells Dawson to just go ahead with whatever speech he has cooked up for her. Clip 20.
Jen, I was sitting out here hoping that you'd want to go out with me for a while. I don't know if you noticed, but we actually spent more time together when I was living somewhere else.
Well, I told you this morning. I'm really busy.
Okay.
But this is it, okay? I am who I am, Dawson.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight with you.
What does that mean?
I'm not your other boyfriend. I'm not going to fight with you. I'm not going to lie to you. And I'm not going to cheat on you. I'm going to go to the movies. All right, if you want to come with me, that'd be great. If not, I'll see you when I get home. Because I will come home. And I'm going to keep coming home, no matter how hard you try and push me away. Now, you can either take my word for it, or you can keep on testing me. But either way, Jen, the results are going to be the same.
I mean, at a certain point, you got to get sick of the pushing, though, right? Like, I understand he's trying to make a point here, but it's like, if she's so determined to get ahead of him dumping her that she dumps him, it's like, it's, you can't anticipate how you're going to react if it ends up going on for weeks or months or whatever.
Yeah. And like, does he think that the radio show was a test, like was about him? Because I don't think it was. And he did have a reaction to it. Like, right. They're not really talking about the issue.
Mm-hmm. Whatever. Back at the frat house, Eric's playing a football video game in his room when Jack wanders in and comments that this is where he was supposed to live. Not bad. Eric asks who told him, and Jack says he figured it out. Eric tells Jack to try to understand. Jack's cool, but Eric just didn't know if he was going to be comfortable around someone so openly gay. Which, just again, the guy so openly gay that he pimped out one of his platonic female friends to you while making no moves and having no expectations anyone would even try to set him up with someone that openly gay? Okay, dude, whatever.
It's very conceited. Like, I can't possibly room with you because I'm so hot that I know that you are going to be staring at my dick the whole time. Like, there's no, there's no indication that that's happening.
Well, it's partly that and partly, like, I don't want to walk in on you with another guy, I guess.
Sure, sure. Also, there's no indication that that's happening ever again on the series.
No, seriously.
Jack's basically a eunuch.
I know, God.
Adam, I'm going to give you a chance to correct yourself. You just said dick, but what did you mean to say?
Dick?
Penis.
Penis.
Jack sarcastically says he would probably try to convert Eric and dress him in tight designer clothes. Plus, there are all those hidden messages in that disco music gay guys love so much. Right, Adam? This is how it
goes. Britney Spears, 2002.
Eric tells him not to do this, but Jack says he hasn't done anything except try to fit in, and Eric is making him feel like a quarantined freak. And Eric finally pauses the game to have it out, and when Jack says he doesn't have to explain, Eric agrees that he doesn't. Clip 21.
I don't want people thinking that I'm gay, okay?
What?
Why not? Because. I don't know. I don't know. I guess because I'm a bit of a homophobe or something.
Look, if you ever want to have a real conversation, my door is always open. But otherwise, you have a nice life.
Yeah, I think when someone says, I guess I'm a bit of a homophobe, you can just take them at their word until they tell you something different, and that can be the end of the relationship. That seems fair to me.
Yeah, if you ever want to make out, my door is open.
And it seems like maybe you do, and that's why you're so scared. I'm just saying. The next morning, Dawson brings his DOP kit into the bathroom, which is like, this is a house. You live there. Figure out where you can leave your stuff permanently. Like, how many drawers does Jen need? My God. Don't make him leave his toothbrush in the bathroom, although maybe just that, if she's going to use it on her eyes again. He sees a new toothbrush in the holder. Jen appears behind him, having somehow noted the model number of his former toothbrush and replaced it with the same thing. Okay, stalker. But they go on. Clip 22.
Could you please not leave those dried up clumps of shaving cream in the sink?
I can do that.
You know why I wear makeup?
Acquiescence to images presented in a male-dominated media?
Yes. My little feminist boyfriend, that's very correct.
Okay, let's not just toss that term around willy-nilly. It does mean something. I would not use it on him personally.
No, I thought it was, his line was cute.
It was cute.
Her reaction was unnecessary.
Agree. They go on. Clip 23.
Because when I was a little girl, I learned that I should hide and I should cover myself up, and that was protection. Do you know how weird it is to live with somebody, to be with somebody who, no matter what you do, can always really see you?
It's a little scary.
It's a lot scary.
Does it help if I remind you how much I like what I see?
Yeah, it does.
Thank you for my new toothbrush.
It's awesome.
So they put toothpaste on their brushes. Jen not using nearly enough, in my opinion. You can see that in the visual aids. And we watch them in the mirror being cute, brushing their teeth together, which, like, rip off the best, bring it on. But I recently listened to a podcast episode where the hosts agreed that we're okay watching other humans put things in their mouth, like food, but we don't love seeing stuff out, like snot and barf. And it occurs to me that toothbrushing is both. You're putting something in and taking something out. So it is a little gross.
The scene in Bring It On, there's a lot of spitting. Like, yeah, it is very cute, but it is, every time I see it, I'm like, I don't, this is not.
It goes on for a long time, too.
Long time.
Then we're at the frat house where Jack is returning his key to Blossom. When Blossom protests, Jack says he's not quitting the frat. He just doesn't want to live in the house under these circumstances. And Eric is sitting on the couch right behind Blossom and watches Jack leave. Then runs out the front door after him to apologize and says if Jack still wants to room with him, he'd be really cool with it. This whole thing has been a real eye-opener for him.
Bet it has.
Seriously. Jack and his terrible haystack hair are torn, but Jack does take back the key from Eric and say he'll think about it, and they share a manly handshake. So I guess watch this space. That's it. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Adam.
I hate to be redundant, but I feel like it has to be Audrey just because everyone else kind of sucks this week.
It's true. Audrey made a lot of stuff happen that needed to, and she putting Danny in his place. She's being honest about the shitty salmon. She's she's living her truth, and I think we can
she's
all
being a good friend.
Yeah, being a great friend to Pacey. Least valuable player. I mean, Eric the homophobe.
Yeah, it's really no contest. in a rough week, it's still no contest.
True. Next time, Dawson finally starts film school at Viz Arts, which you can tell because he's wearing short-sleeved graphic t-shirts over long-sleeve t-shirts like we've never seen him do before. He immediately runs into Oliver, who is even more annoying when we first met him, even before he starts harassing Dawson about directing Oliver's next movie. Joey's just getting things going with Elliot when Professor Wilder interferes again, and Jack is the last one to figure out Greek life might not be his bag. Go to againwiththispodcast.com to find links to all our visual aids, links to buy a very special 90210 book co-authored by Sarah and me, and to buy our merch. We have merch. Get yourself a Don't Be Such a Squeef bucket hat or a Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know water bottle. againwiththispodcast.com is also our handle on Blue Skies, so follow us there too. And Adam, thank you so much for sitting in for Sarah again. Please remind the listeners where to find you online.
Thank you for having me, and we miss you, Sarah. I am personally on various social medias at Adam807, and you can find my podcast about The Muppet Show, etc. at Muppeturgy.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tara Ariano, and I also don't have enough opinions about the French New Wave. Our producer is David T. Cole, who has a real Crispin Glover thing going on. From both of us and Sarah D. Bunting, thanks for listening, and make sure you join us next time.
Ooh, what?
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Putting down roots.
Thank you.